PHP Radio
on the Hackers Paradise Podcast Network,
your number one source for all things golf.
Subscribe on iTunes to never miss an episode.
And welcome back, everyone, to another episode of Off Course. We are closing in on the big 100 episodes. And joining me today is, I'm actually thrilled to have him back on. It's been about 60 episodes since it's happened. Not because I don't like him, just because, you know, that's what happens sometimes. It's Chris Voshaw from Mizuno. Vosh, how are you, my friend?
I'm awesome, Dan. It's been 60 episodes. It feels like it's been longer than that. It's good to catch up.
You know, the last time we hung out, I have pictures of you doing a lot of fun things. Number one, riding a Finn scooter, which, I mean, this isn't the whole episode discussion, but how much fun are those? And number two, hitting clubs off of not cart paths, but driveways, if you will. Do you remember that?
Absolutely. Yeah. You got to do it all. When in Myrtle Beach, you got to act like Myrtle Beach, right?
So we were at Trouble in Caledonia for a THP and Mizuno event. Super fun. I believe at the time it was intended to be an iron event, but, you know, 2021 being the way it is, turned into a driver wedge and now irons that are stuck in a blue box for me event. And man, that was super fun. You are a Carolina golfer guy by youth, right? That was a big thing for you. Was it fun to get back there and see some of that stuff?
It was, man. I grew up in Atlanta, Georgia. I got family all my parents are both from Virginia. So whenever we would go up and down to Virginia, we would always stop at Myrtle and we'd play a lot of times in that Pawleys Island area. And man, it was so great to get back to Caledonia, True Blue, a couple of my favorite courses. I have great, really fond memories of both of them because my low round ever, I've shot it a couple times, but one of them was at True Blue. And I remember as a kid, the first time I ever broke 40 was at Caledonia on the front nine. So that stuck in my head.
Okay. And you got to add another couple things there, like first time you played golf with me, I think, which is a big deal for both of us, obviously. First time you fell off a Finn scooter was at True Blue as well.
you're not really riding if you don't end up with a little road rash, right?
I'm pretty sure you got the video camera up here halfway looking. And, you know, with one hand on the wheel, one hand up here, it's probably not going to end well. But I think that's why you sign waivers for those things.
Absolutely. That video, it popped up on my phone. It said, you got a memory from, a couple weeks ago or whatever. And it showed me myself biting it on the Finn scooter, but it was still a blast. So if anyone who hasn't ever ridden one, if you have the opportunity to it, 100% do it. It is so much fun.
So we'll have to give Cody a shout out as part of the Finn squad from that weekend. I think there was just the three of us that eventually did it. I can't wait to do it again. It's super fun. But yeah, lots changed since then, man. You've got irons that are out now that look different and kind of wonderful by comparison to the last iteration of these irons. Is there anything straight away about Mizuno Pro that you're most excited about? And can I lead you in by saying I got a split set of the 221s and the 225s, which are the blades, and then into the hollow bodies. And if you take a picture from the top, it's really challenging. Like if you take a picture like for the gram or whatever you want it, so it's just all back, it's really challenging to see the difference between the two irons until you go to the toe side and see the thickness change. Is that blending feature one of the best things about Mizuno Pro?
Totally. And that's something that we've been doing for a couple of generations on what was the MP line, now the Mizuno Pro line, is the ability to really dial them in, custom fit them, and get that blended set. The 221 to the 225 combo is one that we are selling a lot of right now because you're right. They've got that muscle back look throughout the entire set. But when you get to the 225, the performance and the benefits you get out of that, it's unbelievable. It's higher performing than you really expect from a Mizuno. And I say that knowing that Mizunos perform well, but man, these have a little extra gas behind them.
Yeah, that's exciting. And I went to the 7 in the 221s. I was afraid to go any higher up. But I'm finally back in a blade, which everyone, shout out to THPers everywhere who've made big demands this off season. So hopefully I get a little playtime in here before I actually have to do anything useful with them. But I don't think that's going to be the featured conversation today, because you guys have so much new product, which is awesome. It's a great year for those who are familiar with Mizuno or curious. You've updated some drivers based on the last time we talked. You've got some great new wedges with a killer finish on them. Mm-hmm. But the one thing that people don't know much about yet, because it's just releasing after we record this and before we publish this podcast, is some brand new M-Craft putters. And if I remember correctly, the last time I talked to you about M-Craft, we talked about just in general what M-Craft is. It was kind of getting started. It seems like you guys are getting a chance to flex and spread your wings a little bit on the line. Yeah, what is coming?
So there's a new line coming, three models called the Amoe line. It still lives under the M-Craft family. M-Craft just represents how we create that product, what it is. It's a forged product. It's forged out of that 1025 material, the same that we use on our muscle backs, things that we use throughout the Mizuno Pro line. So it's going to have the ultimate feel, that forging, and then a precision milling after that, you know, completely milled one piece golf clubs. So the feel is unlike you'll get from most putters in the market. It's funny how there's really not that many forgings, if any, in the putting world, where you want that feel and feedback, and that, and the M-Craft line established that from Mizuno, and it lives on to the next generation, which is under the name Omoi. O-M-O-I is how that's spelled. It's kind of a cool story how we got to where we are with this Omoi, because it started as a conversation of, okay, we've got the M-Craft, we got the 1-6, what do we want to do next with the line? Knowing that we didn't want to get away from what makes a Mizuno putter unique, that forge, that feel, but ultimately, how can we get more performance out of it? So, you know, the natural line of thinking is, okay, I've got these really traditional looking putters. Now I need something more aggressive, a high MOI putter, something, you know, a little bit more funky. But that's not us. That's not what we do. It doesn't lend itself to the forging process very well on top of that. So we started brainstorming about what you can do by manipulating and looking at the entire putter, you know, as a whole, the head weight, shaft weight, the grip weight, how you can balance it different, how you can adjust the club MOI, the overall head MOI, and tweak the weights of each part. That paired with, it's funny, I did a little Instagram poll a while back where, if you don't follow me at Vosh68, just for something fun, got to get more followers. I did a poll of, if you have an M-Craft, do you use the standard, light, or heavy weights in them? And it's amazing how many people opt for heavy on putter. You know, that's just a feel that a lot of people appreciate. So with that in mind, the Amoe line is a heavier version of the standard M-Craft. With that extra heft comes some benefits. So the look of them in general looks very players. Like, we've got, you know, a simple, you know, heel toe weighted plumber's neck answer style, if you want to call it that, if you work for another company. We got a small mallet as well. We've got a nice little like player's blade type as well. But all of them look the part of a player's club, but the performance in the MOI is higher because of the weights that we designed these to. So with that in mind, you're going to get more performance. You're going to get more balance and more consistency out of these clubs than you would a traditional one. And that's where the Amoe name comes from. Amoe is actually Japanese for heavy. And because it is a heavier putter, and the cool thing about it is, you know, buried in Amoe, O-M-O-I, the last three digits is M-O-I. So it kind of works out when the verbiage works. So it's a nice story. Three different head shapes, three different finishes again, really lots of options. And again, they come with a weight kit. So lots of cool options you can do from those from the fitting side.
Yeah, you had me fooled. I just assumed it was MOI with an MOI in front of it. You know, that kind of thing, like Oh Hungry, Oh Henry kind of thing. Is that a Canadian thing? I guess it is.
I think it is.
Yeah, that chocolate bar in Canada, it's called Oh Henry. And and the commercials was always Oh Hungry, Oh Henry, which kind of sounds a lot more inappropriate now that I think about it. But yeah, I was definitely leaning on that, like MOI, okay. But
so no, it's there's cool a whole Japanese story behind it.
What is the deal with including a weight kit? You guys are a very unique in doing that at Mizuno. Was there any intent ever to just say, nah, we'll just like some companies match up the length? Obviously, it impacts the profile of the putter, depending on whether you're 33, 34, or 35, which seems to be average. You guys are saying, here's a weight kit that you might not need or might not use. We want you to have it. Why go that route when everyone else doesn't?
Yeah, you know, it's a conversation where, you know, business-wise and financially, it's a lot easier to just not include it. You know, you'll make more money with it, whatever. Right. But Mizuno's big thing, and you see it from top to bottom in our line, it's how do you fit this golf club? How do you get it dialed into you? You see it in our iron side with our PFS system, with our shaft optimizer. You see it on our wood side with our wood fit pack, with our different head options, different shaft options. The putter world is one that is notoriously neglected in terms of fitting. You know, it's you go into a corral, you see putters all over, you grab the one you happen to make some putts with, and then you walk out with it. While there's some science behind, you probably made them for some reason rather than another, it still feels like it's a world where fitting hasn't taken off, and it should. So with that in mind, the reason we include that weight kit is to almost encourage you to not just take a putter as is, to encourage you to play around with it and see what works best for you. Some players will benefit from a heavier head weight, some a little bit lighter. And the cool thing about it is because of the placement of the weights, one on the heel, one on the toe, you can actually manipulate the closure rate of the face as well. So whether one has like a 45 degree toe hang, you put a heavy weight on the heel and a light weight on the toe, you could actually, you know, decrease that toe hang, or you could increase that toe hang depending on the motion of your stroke. So that's one of the things we wanted to do is if the world of retail isn't going to fit you for your putter, give you the opportunity to fit yourself. And that's why we include that weight kit.
That's awesome. I'm going to challenge you on something based on the process as it is. And you can tell me to move on if I need to. I see a lot of companies and putters nowadays incorporating either really light shafts or really light grips and putting all the weight in the head. Mm-hmm. How much went into that for a putter you obviously had some MOI considerations for while maintaining that player style? Because I'll be honest with you, the closer you can get to the feeling I've had for a long time is more or less what I'm looking for as a golfer. And I'm sure I'm not the only one there. And that's a very stubborn way of looking at it, but it's putting, it's finicky, it's unique. You know, some of these guys, you got old guys who have had the same putter for 50 years, that kind of thing. There's obviously a separation there between tech and learning and accepting. How much went into that for OMOI?
There was a lot of consideration of that because you're right. You know, if you want to get the ultimate in club MOI, you know, and what you do is you'd shove all of the mass down in the head, you'd put the lightest grip possible. You know, you could ultimately, end up with one of those putters that can almost stand up on its own.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's going to feel different when you weight a club like that. So we are very cognizant of how is the club going to feel? How is it going to perform? How is it going to swing for you? So while we did add weight to the head, we did take weight out of the shaft, we did take weight out of the grip, it's not massive amounts that it's going to feel dramatically different than a traditional setup. So while we added, I'm going to call it 10 to 20 grams to the head, we stripped about 10 to 20 grams out of the shaft and then the grip as well. So ultimately, it's not going to be a dramatically different feel. So we're going to give you that boost in club MOI without a huge departure in what you're used to feeling.
Okay. And then I think I saw there's some new finishes or different types of finishes. Is that true?
Yeah. So we have three finishes and three different heads. So nine different, you know, putter options. Okay. So the first, we still have the black IP. It's an ion plated deep black. We have the blue IP, which is a really eye catching. But then the change has actually been in our, what was a chrome. The chrome has become a little bit more, I'm not exactly quite sure how to word it, like a little bit more steely looking, like a little bit more yellowish, which that yellow sounds bad in your head, but it's not. It's a richer looking chrome. The reason we did that is to battle a little bit of some glare we were experiencing off of the previous finish that we had, where depending on where the sun is, you could get some kind of hot spots coming off of that. So this new finish, it's a really rich looking premium we still call it our white finish, but it's not as pure white silver as the previous one was.
Called Double Nickel. It's a great
Double
name
Nickel,
too.
There you go. Because nickel itself is a little bit more yellowish.
Okay.
So it is bringing that nickel. And that's what it is an extra layer of nickel on top that's going to help give it that color and help reflect that light as well, or not reflect that light.
Oh, that's cool. You guys have never been that shy about adding different layers of material or different types of metal. Obviously, it's a conversation piece for the last MP series had an entire layer in itself underneath. Yep. So you've brought that into putters in a different sort of way. Is the intent ever to impact the sound? I mean, obviously you've got more control with the depth of the milling or whatever it may be there, but when it comes to finishes or types of metals you put on top, is there ever consideration on that, or is it just kind of a marriage of everything?
On the putter side, because the impact speed is so low, the sound and the addition of like metals on top of that isn't going to have a dramatic effect as much as it would with like plating on an iron or plating on a wedge even. Because you're right, that copper underlay that we have started on the Mizuno, on the MP20 line, the entire Mizuno Pro line this year has that copper underlay, as do the wedges as well. The putter side, it's not going to have that same level of impact on the feel. So with those, it's more of a cosmetic thing. It's more of making sure the look is right. And the actual base material of the club is going to dictate that feel even more.
Okay. And is there just dancing running birds all over it? Did you finally get running bird on the face of this guy or what?
I don't believe so. Okay. You know what? This shows how bad I am. I don't have one in front of me to tell you if there's a run bird on the face or not. But they're very clean looking. There aren't dancing running birds all over the place. Even though I would love that personally. Yeah. But we'll get there eventually.
Okay. Yeah, you've been a pretty solid run bird guy for the time I've known you. And now that I think about it, Chris, it's been 2 years since you released MCraft at the PGA show?
Correct. That was the spring of 2020.
Spring of 2020. Was it weird this year missing out on that? Does it feel like the season hasn't really got started without the PGA show?
The PGA show, I miss it. I miss being down there. It's always a lot of fun to be down there to show off new stuff. The world of how you launch golf clubs has changed so much, though, where it's almost gotten to a point where it's hard to have a surprise at the PGA show, and especially in light of, you hate to be the guy bring up supply chain issues and all these things, whatever. The world of selling golf clubs now, it's different than it was in January, February of 2020. So in terms of how you have to book stuff out, how you have to plan it in the future, and how you have to bring stuff in and present it and literally sell it earlier versus, launch something new and say, okay, cool, order this now, we'll ship it to you coming up. There's a lot more planning that goes into things now, which it's a good thing, but it's made the value of showing something off brand new at the PGA show a little bit, I'd say, less valuable. I definitely missed being down there this year, but we have so many stories to tell this year with the new irons launching, the new putters, the new woods, the new everything. I think we're doing a good job of getting out and telling it.
Okay. Well, I'm curious about that because I've seen some content going on from you guys. You had a big social gathering of sorts to talk about some product with a lot of golfers from around the country and I would imagine around the world, but I'm guessing at least around the country. Mm-hmm. Is Mizuno telling a different story, a different style of story this year? What's the plan?
So we've made a conscious effort to get younger. And the big thing there is just looking at, it started as a tour promotion strategy in terms of who are your tour players? How do you promote? How do you get out? Who are you looking to sign? And just studying man, these kids are damn good now. Like the average age of the winners has gotten younger and younger and younger. It used to be that golfers hit their peak in their 30s. That's not really the case anymore, which doesn't speak well for me because it's all downhill from here. So what we've done lately is do a lot of things to push ourselves towards younger aspiring, future professionals. So we even went to the point of we hired a girl named Lauren Smith. I say we hired, we promoted. She was internal within Mizuno already. Fantastic golfer, could beat you or me, Dan.
So excuse me, hold on. At least give me a chance to defend myself here.
Oh, she's good.
I'll see you in a week.
She would beat you. So we hired Lauren, who's actually awesome, as a player development rep, which is a position that Mizuno has been lacking for a number of years. And her job is basically to target future stars. And that could be juniors, that could be, you know, college players, that could be high schoolers, you name it. But, you know, working really closely with the AJGA, with the Southeastern Junior, the SJGT, working with local places around the city of Atlanta. And we did, we had an event the week of the PGA show as a pre-launch event for the Mizuno Pro Irons. And we actually had, I believe it was a couple hundred people out to TPC Sugarloaf, invite only of, you know, aspiring collegiate players to come out and get the first sneak peek and get fit with the new stuff. So we had a number of different colleges come from all across the country. We had a bunch of juniors from the Atlanta area, some high schools come. We had some of our influencers in town. We had Austin Riley from the Braves showed up and hit his 7-iron about 210.
Yep,
pretty
perfect,
damn
yeah.
impressive. Yeah. It was a really cool event. And it's ultimately, it's just us acting a little bit different and not being the Mizuno that you've always known.
Yeah, let me challenge that a little bit, because I know from your perspective, you've always been one that is super excited about getting knowledge out there in a way that's both positive and exciting while being educational at the same time. There's no question you've had that perspective every time we've talked. But you get past that sort of corporate structure or limitation, if you will, and obviously look at the other companies and the ways they're doing things and want to do it, going down your own path that maintains that that style and presentation that Mizuno has held for so long. Is it challenging to tiptoe along that line or take chances? Or, you know, obviously young golfers are so in tune with everything. It's not like they're just going to go to the range, come home and go to bed. They're going to go to the range. They're going to put their content on social media. Mm-hmm. They're going to read everything else on social media, good, bad, or indifferent. You know, that's where their origins come from. So that must be a challenge for Mizuno, at least now and then moving forward.
It is. I mean, you almost look at us as, you know, I hate to say it, but kind of like a legacy brand. Like we've been known for what we do and who we are for a very, very long time. The core golfer who grew up with Mizuno playing MP14s, MP29s, that's not the core golfer anymore. I mean, yes, they're playing a lot of golf, but there's a whole new generation who doesn't know that, you know, the GOAT used to play our stuff. I guess I could say that, right?
Yeah.
So there's a lot of stuff out there and just a whole new world of how do you talk and how do you show off your product. So a really interesting case study has been GM Golf. You know, Garrett Clark, Grant Horvat are two guys who, it's funny, you know, they YouTube themselves playing golf. They have matches all the time and just play a ton. And the number of views they get and the audience they reach is totally different than the audience that even you or I reach doing, you know, doing a podcast, doing whatever. It's just a totally different audience. So it's working with different audiences and different age groups and understanding how golf is consumed by different individuals. It's a learning process, man. I'm still learning. We're still figuring it out. We don't know what works and what doesn't work, but we're trying things different, which is exciting because win or lose, you're going to come up, you're going to learn something along the way, which I always like doing.
Yeah. MP33, by the way, that's my origins to Mizuno.
I love it.
You know, that is kind of telling. And I've always been super curious about brands and how they get that sort of dynamic perspective or collective perspective on their product. And you guys have held on to that. Nothing feels like a Mizuno argument for a long time. And I think it's a very fair one because it is a super unique experience, especially compared to some of the, what do you call yourself, storied or whatever legacy brands that are out there. It's definitely your own experience when you go and hit a Mizuno iron. But I think the exciting thing for you, at least for me watching, is you have all these great new products. I mean, is a high fly, it looks insane, or is it fly high or high fly? I'm so sorry.
Fly high. That's okay. High. Everybody,
I mix that up every time.
It wrong. Don't worry about it.
But I mean, that is, everyone's talking about utility irons right now. Mm-hmm. And then you put a product like that out there that has the I've yet to hit it, but it has the sort of Mizuno design philosophy underneath it. It's like, man, I guarantee you this thing sounds unbelievable or it wouldn't get released. It's that pure excitement there. You're taking that product and expanding on it. You have putters which rely heavily on sound quality. new drivers, which are super, super interesting. We spent a lot of time with G last year, mm-hmm. but you have new Z and X or Z and X this year, which is awesome. I mean, it's just fun to see the company as a whole get talked about in another way.
I was going to say what you kind of hit on a really key point there that I really love is the Mizuno Pro line this year. When you look at the irons, you look at the 221, the 223, and the 225, they have a look that is very Mizuno. You know, they look the part, they look clean, they look classic. And when we first, you know, kind of teased the images that had the script Mizuno on them, everyone's like, oh, great. Look, they're bringing back these old muscle backs. You know, there's an instant like connection to the past of what we've done before. But when you hit these golf clubs, when you hit the 221, the 223, the 225, and the fly high, what they do is nothing like the old ones. So okay. We built so much performance and then almost like teased back at the legacy, at the heritage there. So it's cool because that branding, it brings with it expectations. And some of those expectations are, you know, looking backwards, are historic, are old school. But when the performance can take that golf club with that historic look into new heights in terms of what it does, that's when you got something different. You have something unique. And that's why I'm so excited about this new line, because the look doesn't match the performance. You know, it does more than you think it's going to do.
I want to challenge you on your irons for a second here, because the middleman in the pack right now is 223, which is a different take on something you've done, that sort of multi-compound experience. And I'll say, honestly, in full fairness, while I think the MB and I love my MP18 CB, I feel like that multi-compound experience hasn't been the same since MP15, which I was absolutely in love with. It almost, to me, was a separation from what my expectations of the Mizuno overall experience is. We've got THPers right now talking about 223 and saying how unbelievable it sounds. Is there an understanding that once again, this line flows so cleanly, your expectation of a Mizuno will be aligned, whether it's 221, 223, or 225? Is that gap closed? I think you have 223 in the bag. Is that right?
Yeah. So I have 223s in my bag. And it's funny how you talk about the middle one in the lineup. If the Mizuno Pro or the MP line is three golf clubs, that middle one, it's changed a lot. And it's had a lot of different hats on over the last number of years. In the MP18 line, the middle one was the SC, the split cavity.
Yeah.
It was a simple one-piece forging that was just a little bit larger than the muscle back, but it had a cavity. And then on the most extreme, you know, most forgiving side of that was the MMC. You go fast forward to MP20, the MMC shifted down one. The MMC shifted to the middle. So that multi-material moved its way to the middle part. And now that middle one, this has the introduction of COR to it. And there it's evolved to where now it's grain flow forge out of our chromoly material in the long irons and our 1025E in the scoring irons. So what's going to happen is you're still going to get that look of that middle MP1, but man, the ball just does something different. And that's where having the MP and the JPX line live simultaneously, you know, in alternating cycles, has allowed us to unleash more performance out of both lines. Because now for that player who wants just that simple, you know, one piece grain flow forge cavity back, JPX Tour is right there. That's your golf club for that. And it allows us to do more with MP. So yeah, it's definitely changed things. And that MMC was great. And the tie muscle was really good at moving mass around to create MOI. What it was not good at doing was increasing ball speed, because by putting that and forging that titanium in the back, it required a lot of steel around it to house that inside it.
Mm-hmm.
It was a high MOI golf club with a very, very thick face. And now the world is high MOI golf clubs with thinner faces. And now the trick is, if you can forge it with the right process, with the right materials, with the right geometry, can you get that thin face with the Mizuno feel? And that's what 223 is going to give you.
Yeah, I really like how you reminded me that you dropped SC, even though I'm finally over it after two iterations. It's finally okay with me. And then immediately followed that up with, oh, by the way, there's chromoly in the new stuff, which obviously I have a a longstanding love affair with. So I like what you did there, even though it sort of upset me at the same time. and I think I'm most excited about, excuse me, hitting the irons. I love the idea that I get two different types of irons in the place of my bag that I need them, but then I have the opportunity to go into these fly highs, which I've heard are just absolute monsters. Mm-hmm. And I've got the 4.3, which means I probably don't need a driver this year, which is kind of cool. However, I saw something you guys posted on social. I'm going to see what I can dig out for the folks here. Okay. They asked, you guys asked on social, what kind of the top of the driver head and color. It said, do you like black? Do you like blue? Or do you like other? Uh-huh. Now everyone who's listening, every other company likely is going to say, do you like gloss? Do you like matte? Or do you like other? Mizuno says, do you like blue or black? What are you guys doing over there at HQ?
It's funny. So David Matthews, who's one of the guys who I work really closely with on the marketing side, he's the guy who puts together a lot of what we do. He is Mr. Blue Driver. And it's funny, like I've played a blue driver. As long as we've sold a blue driver, I've played a blue driver. And that internal debate goes on constantly. Is blue the way to go? Is black the way to go? You know, what you've seen is we have been growing driver share. We are selling more drivers. Our drivers are getting more popular. They happen to be black right now. But it's funny because the timing of his post, we're having global meetings this week. So this week, we've all been sitting around, myself, he's over in the UK, our team in Japan, have been discussing some things. And one of the things that he won't let die is, man, we need some more blue drivers back. So there's a lot of discussion in terms of where does the blue driver live in the world of drivers? Where does it live in the world of Mizuno drivers? And is there a place for it again? So stay tuned for that.
It's almost an answer. That's pretty good. I remember back in the day, and by that I mean a few years ago, playing the JPX heads that were kind of ahead of their time. You could move the weight around similar to what you see with the new G. Obviously, you could put the weight in different slots and lock it in, not so much sliding around like some other tech out there would have you do. But I remember it being an incredible looking driver, and that's unfair because I love blue. If everything was blue, I'd be totally fine with it. You know, wouldn't upset me at all. What I'm curious about is how challenging that is for you guys to do. Like, obviously you have to be very cautious about what you're ordering based on the ability to get product. I totally get that. I think every golfer who's in tune with golf understands that you have to make very heavy decisions on a daily basis for things that are way down the pipe. So when it comes to adding a product, or in many cases out there, you see some of the custom options. Mm-hmm. Is that what holds you back the most, is not being able to predict the future?
Yeah, there's a lot of that. And golf in general, it's fairly conservative. You know, you'll see some companies do some things a little bit funky, and some guys are a little bit, you know, I'd call it big enough to flex a little muscle to not be as conservative. But if you look at the world of golf clubs, I mean, I'll use irons, for example, and I'll say Mizuno, I think, took a lead in something that you now see is really much driving the industry of, like, game improvement irons don't look like game improvement irons anymore.
Yeah.
So, you know, we started going back when we had, like, the JPX 850, the back of it had a bright blue badge on it. If you look at a Golf Digest hot list from 6-7 years ago, you go through the GI category, every golf club's got a different bright color on it. You go through it now, every golf club is chromed out in silver, and there might be some black, there might be some white on it, maybe a tiny hit of blue or a tiny hit of red or something. Mizuno was actually driving that when I think we were the first ones to really go monochrome on everything we did. So okay. All that to say, from the iron side, safe and conservative, I think it speaks a little bit more to the aspirational part of golf, the aspirational player who everybody wants a muscle back in their bag. If I can make my game improvement irons look like a muscle back, I've done something successful. That's where the hollow body has been such a successful thing.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's like everyone put a trunk on their...
Yeah,
their,
totally.
Like the whole new thing is every club has a trunk on it.
Right. And on the wood side, like to circle it back to there, on the wood side, if it's all about marketing, all about brand recognition, every driver Mizuno made would be blue. But you got to sell some, and it's not all about that. You know, it's not about the golf clubs you give to people. You know, if we said, hey, tour players, here's all your blue ones, that's great because we'd see nothing but blue ones. But to sell them, it's a different story. And yes, some will love blue, but some might hate blue. Black, you don't really love it or hate it. It's just there. It's neutral. It's safer. So, you know, I hate to say that us being black is the safer play, but it is the more traditional play. And as a company that is a more traditional, you know, look at our irons. They're very traditional looking. To then have arguably one of the most bold looking drivers, there's a little bit of a disconnect there. So
let me challenge you here.
Okay.
What of the putters sold best color-wise?
It's funny. It depends on the model. So meaning depends on the head shape. And it's also funny how you look at it. When you look at, there's the sell-in and then there's through custom. So okay. When you sell in, like I'll call it, you know, everything that went into all the big box retailers, I'd say that the white was the most popular.
Really?
When you look at custom, so when people were like, oh, but I can get this in another color, blue was the most popular in custom. So it all depends on how you're looking at it. In general, it almost all washed out where we sold about an even number of all of them. But you can look at like an answer style, the white's probably going to do the best. When you get into a bigger mallet, a darker color is going to do better because it helps hide the size a little bit. Black and the blue did better in those.
I was really rooting for you to say blue. So I'd be like, all right, let's just move on to driver now. We've solved everything.
Just make it blue.
So that's really too bad. You know, it's funny. I pulled up while we're talking here a bunch of the old driver finishes. They're that sort of satiny matte finish with the blue. And man, even if you go darker, even if it's like a black blue, you know what I mean? let's just unlock it, man. Let's be the next white. You know what I mean?
Well, and if you go even back, it's funny how people think of TaylorMade as the driver with color. But you know, if you go back in the day, I guess TaylorMade had orange drivers for a while. We had blue drivers. We had a blue driver win the Masters, which I think would surprise a lot of people.
Yeah,
and the 300S was in the hands of Masters winners, and it was a blue driver. Back in the day, a blue driver wasn't that odd. But back in the day, that driver was probably 185 cc's. Now it's 460.
There's no hide.
More blue you're looking at. So.
Oh man! Well, I'm excited. Do you have G in the bag, or do you have X or Z?
So I play the Z, if you will. So I'm somebody that where the G really stands out is the G. If you need to kill spin, the G is. It's the monster there. It's going to knock spin down. I like one of the guys in the office says I'm spin challenged. Like it doesn't matter what I put in. I am a low spin player. I'll never forget one of the first hit tests we had with the final of the G. I was hitting it and my launch angle was like, I want to say I was launching it at 13 and a half. My spin rates were between 11 and 1200. Like so low that you could watch the ball knuckle through the sky. So I play a little bit. I want something that's going to spin a little bit more. I play the Z myself.
Okay. Yeah. I'm happy to send down 1,000 RPM to you if you need it.
I will gladly take them.
Oh man. Well, you know, it's February and one of the big things right now is the West Coast swing. We've moved away from Hawaii, which means I need to stop crying and start moving on to just subtle moping stage of my off season. And it's kind of fun because you see the different courses and the what I call them, the memorable stops. And that's like your Pebble, your Torrey, Waste Management or Wasted Management, depending on how you look at it. And I think one of my favorite ones is coming up is the tournament at RIV, the Genesis. Yep. Mm-hmm. Do you have a preferred tournament on the West Coast swing?
It's fun. So I kind of have two answers to that. The one that I've been very, very fortunate enough to get to play Pebble a number of times. So I love Sunday of that event when everybody's at Pebble. I love watching that because it's always a good finish. You know, there's something about those final holes. I've never played Riv, and man, do I want to.
Like, yeah, let's go.
That's a bucket list one there is to get like the Riv, Bel Air, LA, that little trifecta right there. I need that trip.
How do you think you'd do on the 10th there?
I mean, you have to go for it. I think the numbers say you got to, you know.
No,
I was reading on Twitter, there was a back and forth between Kip Henley and Brian Gay. Brian Gay was one of the best short games ever, arguing why you should lay up there. And Kip basically saying, no, you hit driver 100 out of 100 times. It was a good argument.
That's really funny. I had a conversation on the THP community about the stadium hole 16. And it's something I watched that hole. I actually watched the 17th at Pebble all day Sunday, which was really fun. And they beat that hole up. Mm-hmm. And then I watched the 16th this past weekend because ESPN Plus has their featured holes. And as it turns out, I really enjoy watching that. So I'm assuming the 10th will be a featured hole this week. I don't know how you can't. And by this week, I mean last week since we're pre-recording.
Right.
But I was joking around on the forum and I said, where do you think the next best place would be for a stadium hole, for a stadium setup? Ooh. I'm like, could you imagine putting that thing on the 10th and the amount of agony that would go through people?
Oh, that would be mean because at least at 16 at Waste Management, like you're not going to make a double.
Yeah.
And you're not going to go bunker to bunker and stuff like that. Could you imagine if that crowd watched you go bunker to bunker, which many people will do on 10 at Riviera.
Well, the one thing they'd have to do is find a way to set it up where golfers weren't bouncing the ball off people off the tee. Because there's always the guy that pulls it left because he doesn't want to go in the bunker right.
Yep.
And you have it just trickling down the hill, or I suppose trundling is a better word, down the hill behind the trees. And you're like, oh, I can't wait to see this. But could you imagine the heckling by thousands of people?
Oh, a drivable par 4 is so much fun. Like, I can't wait. Waste Management, honestly, they should do the same thing on 17. Like, they should just expand that
and make it
two holes of chaos.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
No, well, I mean, it would be awesome.
That's pretty funny. Do you think that the 10th at Riv is one of the best par 4s on the tour?
I think it is. You know, if there's a hole where there's so much strategy to what you try to do and where you leave it. And I love that. And to me, it's a fantastic hole. I heard an interesting thing is, you know, I was fortunate enough. I've got to sit down and talk to Nick Faldo a number of times. And this isn't about Riv number 10, but he was explaining to me why number 12 at Pebble is the best US Open par 3 there is. And I just thought, to me, I thought this was really interesting. And he said, in U.S. Open conditions, number 12, that par 3 at that length, the right play is not to hit the green. The right play is hit in the bunker front, because you'll make a 3, maybe a 4, but nothing else. And he's like, which players are smart enough to play it like that? And I thought that was a really, really interesting take that, like, the green isn't even the target on a par 3, which I've never heard of a player talking about something like that. And it made me think of just the strategy that goes through his mind. And I'm sure the players at Riviera, the strategy that goes into number 10 and where do I need to put it and how do I not make a big number, I think is really interesting.
That's wild. And you know, that's a Faldo perspective. That's obviously his generation of golf. Whereas if you ask like a Tiger or a DJ or, you know, someone like that, they're gonna be like, oh, no chance. Hunting all day long. I'm gonna hit like a little screaming curly fade that works against the wind. And it's a totally different game now, but it is fun to listen to the sort of strategist that goes into the different generations of golfer. That's cool, man. I'm never aiming at a bunker. I'm not getting paid. So all day long. I can't wait to watch it. Obviously it will have already come and gone. Do you have a guy you like this weekend?
Ooh, it's always hard to go against, you know what? I'm going to pick my guy. I got to pick two. Sorry. I keep mumbling. Rory. I want Rory to win it.
Okay.
I love Victor Hovland. I think, I like him. I like his attitude. I like how he carries himself around the course. I think he's got a good shot out there. And my boy Keith Mitchell's playing some damn good golf. I want him to show up well too.
Yeah, I should have said brand agnostic. Should have been.
How about you? Who do you got? We'll see.
Oh, man. I don't know. I root for Rory every tournament he gets into. I'm a big fan of Rory when he's playing well. Yeah. And I think he's a nice ambassador of the game. I think it took him a while to get there, but I think he represents a lot of my opinions when he does share them. So mm-hmm. yeah, anytime he can get into the fray is great. There's a couple guys that I always root for any tournament they're in. Tony Finau is one of those guys. Yep. If he's playing, I'm super into it. I've been really enjoying Ricky playing well a little bit. Mm-hmm. So hopefully he can break through somewhere. I'm not sure who's even in the event. I haven't checked, but there's a small collective of guys who I would never root against. Let's just say that,
yeah.
Which is much bigger than the group of guys I would never root for. So that's good. Yep. We're not touching that one.
I'm right there with you with Tony Finau. He's one of my favorite guys. It's hard to not love Tony Finau, especially after you've seen that video of him doing the Dougie. That's one of my favorites.
Oh, he's a trip, man. Give me a little bit of food insight before we go. Just give me just one little tickle of food thing.
Ooh, what kind of food thing?
Something. You got dinner? You and JB are always talking about snacks on Twitter. What's the big snack? What's the go-to snack right now?
Well, it's Valentine's Day weekend, and my wife was very kind. Sitting at work the other day, there was a knock on the door, and they delivered some crumble cookies.
Okay.
Which, do you have crumble cookies?
I've had crumble cookie, yeah.
Well, if you've had it, you need to have it again. It's phenomenal. So it's really good. They're absolutely amazing. So that's been the go-to snack lately. It's a 4-pack where if you eat a whole one, you're like, oh my God, that was too much. That's a 4-pack. It's 8 sittings.
We got together as a THP staff at one point and got crumble and just took, you know, quarters of each cookie to try them all.
Yep.
It was a rather boring evening after that because I think we were all just kind of living in our own sugar high.
I'm so excited for tonight. So we'll speak to food and my plans for tonight. I got Indian food at home. I got crumble cookies for after that, and I got the last episode of Ozark in the season to watch. Okay. So I got a good night coming up.
All right. Last question before I let you off the hook. Are you still shoe challenged or do you have something that is 100% your attention?
Whew. So yeah, the history behind this is the tour premiere that, oh man, what a
bring
shoe.
Him back.
Bring it back. It's that simple. Bring it back.
Yeah.
This past year I went to the ZG, some of the Adidas ones.
Okay.
Man, they're comfortable. It's funny because at PGA show, one of my favorite things to do is go around and look at what new shoe options there are. So I didn't get to do that this year. So instead I've been hunting websites.
Okay.
And I don't know which one I'm going with right now.
All right.
I honestly haven't made that decision. I still like last year's ZG, the ZG 21. I think there's like a recycled material one made that's kind of blue. I think that'd be my next purchase.
Okay.
What are you rocking?
Oh man, it's been a roller coaster. I've not really landed on too much just yet. The Pro Adapt Delta, I've got two pairs of those from Puma. One of them is the Arnold Palmer release, and one of them
nice.
I got kind of roasted on social. It was actually pretty funny. Instagram loved it. Twitter gave me all kinds of grief over it, which is great. It, like, talk about playing to your audience. I should have just put it on Insta and never post on Twitter about it. I got told it looked like it got put in the wash with a bunch of crayons. I had all kinds of stuff, but they're sick. I'll have to show you them. But I'm not like sold. It's not like Tour Premier sold because there's so many good options out there. I just saw a really cool new one from FootJoy that I'm pretty surprisingly excited about. I haven't worn a FootJoy in a while, so that's mm-hmm. really curious. I really want to try some. It's the new one that I just saw.
I think it's the Flex, right?
Yeah, it looks, there's like the back has a color and then the rest of the shoe is its own color. Yeah.
I went and looked at those because I was curious to look at those as well. So I went to PJ Tour Superstore like 2 days ago to go look at them. The one thing, and FootJoy's done this before, like the DNA did this before, where from the top, you can see a little bit of the sole sticking out. Like you could, it had like a extra spike on the toe side.
And that golfers to me, are just not healthy. Yeah.
This one's got a little bit coming out the side, which it didn't do it for me. Some people, it won't bother them one bit because it's a good looking shoe, but that little bit got me.
They're probably thinking about that powerful swing you have. And when you twist your foot, it just gains an added extra bit of traction. You might need it.
It's that thing I didn't need. I didn't know I needed.
You'd be Mizuno Player of the Year again. That'd be great. Yeah. Yeah. So wide open, but as you know, I will always bring you into the good finds I have. So
nice.
I'm here for you as we chase our tour premiere solution. Hey, Vosh, I always have a blast with you, man. Do you have any questions for me today?
Dan, I want to know what you're doing. And now that you're not able to be out and playing a ton, talk to me about your driver. Talk to me about what's going on with the driver. Where are you in a mental space getting ready to get back driving at will?
You've been holding on to this one for months after what you saw me do. Yeah. So basically I was last time Vosh and I played together, I had this, I still do. I have like a hitch in my driver swing, and it was at the point where I could only hit utility iron off the tee, and was getting heckled by my partner for not hitting it far enough. So that was pretty fun. Not much. I think time heals all wounds, as they say, but I've been heavily invested in the YouTube consumption during this off season. I've got some ideas. Chill out on that flying left right elbow, which will be pretty good. Kind of sets me in a better slot. And just a lot of praying, you know, just a lot of praying to the golf gods, saying, look, we had a good thing. It kind of still looks like that, but for some reason it's not. So let's just get back there. And not to mention, my kid's 6 right now and showing some serious skills. So I can't really afford to have him beat me just yet.
There you go. So. Have you ever tried the Dustin Johnson, the like bowed left wrist?
Yeah, it didn't feel good.
It doesn't feel good, but and Victor Hovland's doing the same thing. And look at the ball speed that comes from it.
Yeah.
It's funny. I was actually just messing around we had a simulator at work here. So I was doing a little testing, and it's unbelievable the speed that you can gain just from a little extra move. And so I'm curious about that now, because I want to get it as far as you do.
I'm wide open. Yeah. As far as I do, which way? I mean, my 8-iron's still perfectly good. If you watch THP TV at all, there's nothing wrong with that. And I've had the forged in the bag previous to it. So it's not like they were coming up short. It was just a matter of picking the right set of tees to where I could hit most of the irons off the box. So yeah. Anything else for me? Or is that all?
No, I'm looking forward to us getting together again. I'm looking forward to playing again. And absolutely. I'm looking forward to you finding the shoe that is the magic one. And for us. Will do the same. And we are going to speak about it.
All right. Sounds good. Hey, let's not make it 60 episodes before the next one, my friend. It's always a blast.
Absolutely. Thanks for the time.
All right. Everyone out there, if you are golfing this weekend, make sure you're having a great time doing it. Enjoy the weather if you've got it. And definitely go check out anything coming out from Mizuno right now, because I'm excited about all of it. I know Vosh is, and I hope you are too. We'll see you next week.
THP Radio on the Hackers Paradise Podcast Network, your number one source for all things golf. Subscribe on iTunes to never miss an episode.